to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Get ready to uncover the secrets, gain valuable insights, and conquer any dental challenge that comes your way. From advanced techniques, innovative technologies, and the ever-important set skills, Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon, and I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to me and to my podcast. Today, I have a guest that I really have enjoyed visiting with. His name is Dr. David Moffat, and David resides in Sydney, Australia. So David brings a around-the-world view of dentistry, and what's been interesting to discover is that the dentistry that is done in Australia is just very similar to the techniques and the styles and the quality and the type of dentistry that we do here in the United States. And I know David had a great practice down in Australia. I heard about David a number of years ago. Actually, when your book came out, David, I did get your book and read it, and I enjoyed it. David does spend a fair amount of time in the United States. He has a lot of dental friends, some pretty significant power figures in the dental industry are friends of his. David is a dental consultant. He has some clients here in the United States. And last evening, I sat in on one of David's webinars on the Ultimate Patient Experience consulting group that he has. And so we'll let David talk about that. But the thing that brought me to want to visit with you, David, and bring you on my podcast was on LinkedIn, I saw the Ultimate Patient Experience. And in my practice, that's what I tried to provide. And so I immediately found a connection with you on that before I met you. And through our conversations, I've come to realize that, you know, your practice and my practice are very, very similar. You've retired, as I have. And so, David, I'll let you share with your bio what you think our audience needs to know about you. So take it away.
Yeah. Hi, John. Great to speak with you again. And thank you very much for this opportunity of talking to your audience and your listeners. You pretty well summed it up. I was a dentist for 35 years. For 28 of those, I owned and ran my own dental practice in the one location. When I left that practice, it was more than half my life had been spent in that one location, and I built that practice up from being I bought it off a one-man dentist with one assistant who was, you know, receptionist, assistant, steri, everything. She did everything. And when I left that practice, we had seven chairs across two locations very close to each other. And I employed two associate dentists, and a couple of specialists came to my rooms as well, and at one stage, three hygienists as well. So we took the turnover of that practice and grew it steadily and consistently over that time. And what I found was that, you know, the best way to build a successful practice was to treat your patients with exceptional customer service, so that they wanted to come back, and it became more about the dentist, more about the relationship and the experience, and less about the actual dentistry. And that was my premise, and that's what helped me build a very great business. I sold that business and then retired to work for a colleague of mine, just to see whether I could either work for him or whether I'd start another practice or buy another practice. And I started doing some coaching and consulting in that time, because after I'd sold, other dentists kept coming to me and saying, David, you know, you had a great practice. How did you do that? Can you have a look at my practice? So I transitioned into practice management as a result, which was fortunate, because after a year of working for my friend, I was diagnosed with chronic osteoarthritis in my hands, in my thumbs. I learned a lot about the anatomy of the hand. I thought the thumb only had one joint, but it's got three. And in both hands, two of those three joints were very arthritic and caused me to drop things and not hold things, and also caused me pain. So I retired myself clinically in 2017. And so for the last 6 years, I haven't picked up a handpiece. And so I've been coaching continuously since then. And you're right, I do have clients in the United States, in Canada, in the UK, as well as in New Zealand and in Southeast Asia, as well as Australia. So I work across many time zones at the moment in my coaching. And I'm always looking to learn from my clients as well as teach my clients. And that's I think, the journey of a good coach is that you're striving always for improvement and excellence. Excellence is unachievable, but it's a good goal to strive for, but always looking to improve. And that was, again, the principle of what we did with our patients. We wanted to make sure that their visit today was better than their visit last week, and their visit next week was going to be better than their visit today. And that was always the premise that we wanted. And you know, we knew who our best patients were, and we used to say, in fact, our best patient wasn't even our perfect avatar. And we used to say, we've got to find out what we're doing for him. You know, Russell's in today, and whatever we're doing for Russell, we've got to find out what keeps him coming back, and we've got to do that for everybody, because it's obviously working for Russell, and that's our secret sauce, and that's what we've got to be doing for everybody. So we were always looking at improving the relationship, because ultimately they can get their dentistry anywhere. Patients, yeah. They don't go to a barbecue or a dinner party and say, "Hey, look at my margins; they're 20 microns," and you know, the other person doesn't say, "Oh, gee, mine are 22. I better go to your dentist." It's all about how you make them feel and what you do for them, and that was what we did. So that's what I built the ultimate patient experience about. You know, systemizing exactly the processes that the patient would go through from the moment they decided to need a dentist to the moment that they left your practice. And then that became a continuous cycle. You know, every time they needed the dentist, they would start that process. And every time they finished at the practice, they would then come back. And dentistry should be like that. It should be always, you know, everybody should leave with an appointment and have a next clear next step as to what they've got to do. And often I think that's where dentistry falls down, John, is that patients get confused, or they don't get clarity about what will happen if they don't get their dental diagnosis completed.
Yeah. I'm curious, David, you have patients worldwide, basically. How do they find you? How do they hear about you?
You mean clients?
What's that?
You mean coaching clients?
Coaching clients, yes.
Yes. So I did have patients who used to travel from New Zealand and North Queensland. In fact, one of my patients did say that New Zealand was closer than North Queensland when he lived there, and also then he moved to London and China as well. So I had patients who did that, so clients find me online. You know, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook. They're my primary methods. You know, I have a blog. I write the blog twice a week. I've done that for 11 or 12 years. So there's 11 or 1200 blogs out there. It's every blog is written, you know, exclusively for that day. It may cover a topic from the past, but, you know, just recently I turned a major sporting event into four lessons about how this result of this football game went and what you could learn for your business from this result of this football game. And so that's what I do. I'm quite comfortable writing, and I'm quite comfortable speaking to clients and making sure that, you know, they know that there is a pathway to success with their dental practice. And the reason that people fail to have a successful dental practice is that their behavior deviates from the behaviors needed to stay on that pathway. And, you know, we call that the green line. And if they leave the green line, they've either got to get back on it or the results aren't the same. And so we just keep them focused on making sure they stay on that green line and focus on getting those results. Kind of like Siri. You know, she keeps you on the best possible route in your car. Sometimes she'll suggest an alternate route, and you go on that alternate route, and you find that you're on a narrow country lane, and you go, "What the heck am I doing here?"
You're right. I know your advice is not like Siri, though, David. I'm pretty confident of that. Describe with me, a client connects with you, and you guys come to an agreement, say, let's do this. What's the first thing that you do with a client to bring them in to your consulting?
Well, I'm going to refer back to Siri because, or anything, John, you know, if we're going on a vacation, we've got to know where we're going to go. And before the vacation starts, we've got to know where we're starting from. And so it's the same with a dental practice. They have issues. We need to find out what those issues are, what they're trying to improve, and what they're trying to create. And where are we starting from in terms of what do they have in their practice right now? And sometimes because of the remoteness of coaching across the world, sometimes we don't find things out exactly for some months. But what we do find is that when a client brings us an issue that we need to solve, if we don't, as Shrek said, peel back the layers, we can be trying to solve something that the cause is way back over here. And if we peel back the layers, we say, oh, well, this is the cause. We'll fix this. And then all of a sudden, like dominoes, everything falls into place. And the problem that they were trying to solve is fixed by fixing it back here. There's a damp spot on my lawn. Well, why is it damp? We can dig that up, and then we find that it's leaking from somewhere. But if we follow that pipe back up, it might be leaking from a gutter or a downpipe on another part of the house that's causing that dampness on the lawn. And yet, we need to focus on where that problem is. And ultimately, in any business, there's no perfect business. You know, it's always about molding and maneuvering and improving different parts of the business. And, you know, like painting a house, you think you just got to paint one room I'll just paint the bedroom, or I'll just paint the sunroom. And then all of a sudden, everything else looks a little bit shabby. In fact, in dental diagnosis, it used to be like that, didn't it? Back in the old amalgam days, I picked out a few bad ones, and then they come back 6 months later and you go, gee, my stuff looks good, but those other things that I left there, they look really bad now, you know, compared to my new good stuff. It's like that. And so the best clients I have are the ones who are very open and come to me and they say, David, all right, how about this system? Let's have a look. This is what I'm doing. Can you see if I can improve it? And sometimes when they do that, I uncover something that is affecting the whole practice,
right?
That I didn't know until they've brought that part to me. We coach with regular meetings. We have one-on-one meetings. We have group meetings. We have educational coaching lessons as well. We have private online communities that our clients can ask questions in, and it works very well. You know, on a coaching day, I'll do three different times, which usually picks up across the world. It'll pick up for every client. At least two of them. They can be, you know, like in the US, it'll be afternoon and evening in the US. In New Zealand, they actually pick up all three. And the East Coast of Australia, they can. And then in the UK, they get two as well. And it works quite well. But it's very much, you know, not everybody turns out the same practice. I don't turn out, it's not like that's a McDonald's practice, that's a McDonald's practice, or that's a Moffitt practice, that's a Moffitt practice. But everybody ends up with a better practice, a better version of their own practice. And I think that's important. you know, to maintain the client's personality within the practice.
I'm sure with your clients, they all come in with a little, their practices are very different across the board. And you have to obviously listen to what their present situation is. And I imagine a lot of times they're kind of desperate, confused, not sure exactly what their problem is, where to go with it. And so they become paralyzed to a degree as to what action to take. And this is where you come in as a coach, helping them identify, but also appreciate where they are at this point in time and know that there is a foundation for them to grow from, and then identify their vision as to where they want to go with it. And then you help them set the steps in that journey. Does that sound like what your approach is, David, with your clients?
Yeah, John, it's what we find is that, we look at certain metrics that we need to measure, and there's only a handful of these numbers, but they're specific for getting results. You know, there's plenty of things that people measure, but they don't really impact on the practice of dentistry. You're really looking at, you know, how much dentistry is being done, what the value of that dentistry is, and how many new patients is a practice having, and how many patients is that practice leaking as well. And because ultimately everybody who comes to your practice, if you do the best job for them, they should become a patient for life. You know, they should complete their restorative treatment and be in your hygiene program forever until they either move too far away or they move to the next world. That's what the relationship should be. And so the reasons for people leaving a dental practice is they either get hurt or they feel that they're not getting the value in what they're spending, in their dollar value, or they're not being respected. They're being taken for granted, and apathy and perceived apathy are probably the biggest killers of dental practices. That, you know, patients feel as if they are being ignored. And, you know, my wife and I still have memories of a fine dining restaurant where we went to, where the owner was the chef and his wife was the, you know, working the floor on the tables. And we always felt that when we spoke with her, she had one eye on us and one eye somewhere else. You know, just two eyes working in different directions rather than let me spend some time with this client. And patients will know that if you're in a hurry. And so you've got to really make sure that a friend of mine once said to me that children spell love T-I-M-E. And I kept telling my team that patients spell love the same way. You know, we've just got to spend time with our patients. Yeah. And if we spend time with them, they'll keep coming back.
Yeah. My understanding in my reading and listening to speakers is that one of the main reasons that people will leave a practice is, as you mentioned, indifference. And a lot of that indifference comes from the staff. But I think that indifference attitude starts with the dentist himself or themselves, excuse me. And then they allow their staff to maintain that same attitude.
Yeah, there's a business phrase, John. You know, the fish stinks from the head down, and sadly, that you're right. If the dentist is a poor communicator with his team, then he will also be a poor communicator with his patients, and then the team will assume that same behavior. Yeah, and so it's up to the leader to learn how to lead. And, you know, so, you know, you and I spoke just this morning before this call about libraries. And so reading books on leadership is very important. And, you know, nobody is a born leader. Just like no child in the history of the world has been born speaking. They all learn how to speak and then they learn what to say. And so leadership is something that people can learn to lead effectively. Mm-hmm. And it's all just lessons and perseverance. And, you know, I don't think Churchill was a born leader. I don't think Warren Buffett's a born leader, but these people know how to run organisations. And so all a dental practice is organisation, and very much so, because while the dentist is drilling teeth, he really can't be communicating with anybody but his assistant and the patient in the chair, yet so many other patient interactions are going on at the same time in other parts of the practice. And so it's up to the dentist to have expectations of what should be happening. I don't know about your practice, but it happened occasionally in mine, much to my dismay, where patients just walked out of the client lounge because they weren't informed as to why I was running behind. And they just, and I said, why didn't you speak to that patient? Oh, I didn't know I had to do that. Didn't know what to say. So I guess it was me with that, not giving them that lesson of we need to speak to let people know that, you know, the doctor's running behind, because most of the time the patient waiting or held up will say, tell him to take his time, it's okay, because they don't want the dentist wound up when it's their turn. You know, they'd much rather the dentist be relaxed. Yeah, take your time. I've got all day.
Yeah.
And they even just had that conversation with a client this week that most patients don't have somewhere immediately to go to after their appointment. So if we want to extend that appointment because we've had a change in our schedule, they're probably happy to stay and just get another injection and have more work done because the rest of the day's been written off anyway. So, but we've got to value people's time and we've got to be on time as much as possible. We can't be running behind. And we, again, it's respect. If we respect the starting time, then our patients will respect to be turning up on time. You know, you never want the patient who turns up 15 minutes late and says, well, he's always running 15 minutes late, so I'm okay.
Yeah.
So, again, it's respect, and you're right, indifference versus respect, and that's what builds a practice.
Yeah. Everybody loves to be respected. Everybody loves to be heard, listened to, and appreciated. And in light of that, David, I want to ask you, what are the most common obstacles that you see from clients that come to work with you as to reaching their goals for their practice or getting themselves out of the mess that they have gotten themselves into? What is some of the main obstacles?
Oh, John, it's there's probably plenty. They've got to understand that there has to be some change. You know, the definition of insanity is to keep on doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. You know, if you keep on doing what you've always done, you'll keep on getting what you've always got. So they have to come thinking that change is going to happen for improvement and for result. But some clients in dentistry don't let go enough to allow the change to happen for the better. Let me give you an example. Probably the toughest thing with a new client is that they have to hold staff meetings during practice hours.
Yes.
Not during a lunchtime. We've got to rule off some clinical time and have a meeting so that we can get better. It's the, you know, the old story of the two wood choppers who have a challenge as to who can chop down the most trees, and one of them's chopping all day long, and every time he looks over at the other guy, he's not chopping. And at the end of the day, the one who's chopped down the most trees is the guy who appeared to be not working. And the other guy says, "I don't know how you did it." He said, "Well," he said, "every time I looked over, you weren't working." He said, "Yeah," he said, I was sharpening my saw."
Ah, okay.
And so the other guy just kept chopping with a blunt saw, you know. And sometimes that's what we do in our education, in our administration, is to just hold that meeting and help to coach our team, even if it's a meeting just to review the week before, to have a regular meeting. The other thing that also was difficult in when I was being coached as a dentist was to have emergency time free each day for same day emergencies. So why would I turn away a patient who wants that appointment for tomorrow if they want it today, if on the hope of somebody else? And of course, you never know what the same day emergency is going to need doing. Yeah. And as you know, that you get somebody out of pain on the same day,
They're
like a puppy dog. They're your client for life. They love you. Yeah. They love you for the rest of you. You're their hero. And so learning that too is really, really important. And so change is the biggest obstacle. So sometimes the pain of not knowing what to do is so great that they understand that they need to do something different. And so those lessons that you would have seen in that presentation that I did last night were from two clients who understood that if they didn't change, it was going to be the end of them. Dr. Lacey, who was seeing 60 patients a day, in her fourth year out, she said, "This is not the way that this is not what I signed up for." And also, Dr. Rachel, who said that, thought that her patients only would see her and nobody else. And so it was she just needed somebody to hold her hand and show her how to incorporate a hygienist in so that she gave herself some time to do the things that she needed to for her existing patients who needed her more urgently rather than hygiene. And it's the same with building and growing, as you know, growing an associate dentist in your practice and creating that time there as well. So, sometimes some people are just too stubborn in letting go. And I think, John, it's a condition related to the requirements of being a dentist. You've got to be a smart person at school, then you've got to be smart enough to get through university to get your dental degree, and so then you become a dentist. And so you then think, or clients think, well, I'm smart enough to have gotten through school and I'm smart enough to have gotten my degree. I should be smart enough to work this out for myself.
Yeah.
And so they hold on to that belief. John, I lost a significant amount of money by thinking I was smart enough to know how to play the stock market. I'm just trying to think which problem it was. Wasn't the .com one? It was the GFC, so the global financial crisis. I lost a large amount of money by thinking that I could invest in blue chips as the market was going south. And I realized that I didn't have the time to do the education, and I would be better off having my investments managed by somebody who did that on a full-time basis.
You bet.
So that I could do the dentistry.
Yeah.
And fortunately, with the stock market, it always recovers past its previous downturn. Time heals old wounds, but it's a mistake I wish I hadn't made, but it's a lesson that I learned. And I wish my clients would learn that sometimes, my potential clients, because the successes I have with those who understand that none of us are smarter than all of us, those are the ones that really do, help to give back the lesson that, they're on the right path. And doing those things is important.
With your clients, David, share with us what you have learned from your years of consulting. What can they expect as far as working with you? What kind of results? Nothing is a guarantee, but just share with them some highlights that you've had to kind of give people encouragement, a good feel.
Well, I think John, the best thing is that delegation is important for the dentist. Just like the mechanic who services the car, the phone rings. He's underneath the car. He's covered in grease. He can't be running into the office to answer the phone. He needs somebody to do that, and then it's a matter of what are the roles of those people that we have in the practice, and what are the goals that they're trying to achieve. My daughter started working in clothing retail for a regular clothing company, and she talks about targets and goals in selling T-shirts and shirts and just regular routine stuff. We've got this target during this period because we know what we did last year, and we know that this is the season that people want these. And yet in dentistry, we often don't have targets and we don't have any expectation. And the targets are not a wish list. The targets are really based on previous performance, and can we improve that performance? Can we maintain those good months, and what did we do in those good months? And so one of the things that I learned very early on was that if you're going to rely on people phoning your practice to make an appointment, you wanted to make sure that you knew the numbers, how many people were calling to make an appointment and how many of those people made an appointment, and what were those numbers, and why were those numbers different for different employees? Why were they different percentages for different sources of new patient inquiry? You can spend a lot of money on one sort of inquiry and find that you get a lot of calls but not many appointments, and then you can spend less money on an advertisement that brings a lot of people who really just want to become your patient no matter what. And so fortunately, in one of my early client coachings, we did an analysis of how the phones were being answered in her practice, and we found that her receptionist, on the days that she wasn't there, the office manager would answer the phone, and the office manager had a far lower cancellation rate than the receptionist did. And so we attempted to educate and improve the receptionist on not allowing people to cancel and reschedule, because even a reschedule we've got to fill the gap. But we weren't able to. And so the office manager then became the new receptionist, and that saw a significant improvement in the scheduling because less people were being rescheduled or cancelled. Yeah. And so then the schedule got built out. And so it was a matter of looking at the numbers in that situation and then educating and training. And so when my wife, who works in our business, when people ask her, what does she do for a living? And she says, well, I teach dental front office people how to answer the phone better. one of the responses people say when she says that to them is she goes, is that really a job? Like, how hard can that be? But when you listen to clients, and always happens with a new client, we've just started with a new practice, and everybody's answering the phone with a different greeting.
Yes.
Like, there's not even one standard greeting. Yet when you go to McDonald's, everybody there knows what they have to say and says it, and they know that if they don't ask for a supersize, then they don't get the supersize. And so every word has to be spoken with purpose. And even away from the phones, in the dental practice, that's one thing that I used to tell my staff. Our conversations have to be purposeful. And what's the purpose? The purpose is to find out information about the patient. Talk about the patient, not about us. Talk about the patient. And if we talk about the patient and then we share that with each other, so that next time they come in and they're dealing with another team member and the other team member says, oh, last time you were in, you were telling Jenny about your daughter's graduation. All of a sudden the patient goes, oh, wow, I'm more than just a tooth and a credit card to this practice. They actually are interested in what I'm doing. And so, again, it's about educating the team on how can they be more personable with the patients and interact with the patients. Because we get conditioned in our office as dentists, as dental assistants, as hygienists. We get conditioned to, it's not that bad. We do it all day long. How can it be that bad? Whereas really for every patient, it's still like getting on that roller coaster and up to the top for the first time. It's like, oh, how scary is this going to be? And we forget that. And what we've got to do is we've got to smooth over the emotional humps and bumps that our patients have, you know, before they walk in the door, while they're sitting there tapping their fingers waiting to be brought down to the treatment room, while they're sitting in the treatment room before the dentist comes there, you know, after. Yeah, you know, some people just want to get out of the place quickly. How do we smooth that over? And when we educate on the systems, we also educate on the behaviors needed so that it becomes more like a Ritz-Carlton, a Neiman Marcus, a Nordstrom's experience rather than just a grunt and goodbye.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up about the front desk and the telephone, because I think that that is one critical area that so many offices, dentists, dental office managers and whatever overlook. And they just bring somebody in to fill that void and to say, okay, we're going to bring someone in that's an expert in dental insurance, but she has absolutely no phone skills, no personality and whatever, but she's put up front and consequently she's in line next to answer the phone if the primary person is in conversation. We just don't manage that well, but we have expectations for them to perform excellence, but we haven't trained them, but most importantly, we haven't brought the right people in because we haven't vetted them appropriately when we've gone through interviewing process, and then we default and just say, okay, well, let's bring Sally in, put her up there and hope for the best, and oh, by the way, just answer the phone and get them in. Well, what does that mean to Sally? So much of the practice is a direct relationship with the front desk to how they communicate and relate with that new patient phone call. But we don't place the importance upon that. And so I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, it needs to be important, John. We all know how we feel when we go off to the theater and just before the curtain comes up, they say, oh, by the way, tonight the role of the lead performer is being performed by the understudy. And you go, yes, I've paid full price and I'm getting the understudy. And the understudy can be really, really good and usually is, but that disappointment. Now, that's what we're doing to our patients and our new patients when the dental assistant answers the phone or the steri girl answers the phone. Yes. And sometimes it's an educational process. Sometimes the steri girl hears the phone ring and goes, oh, I can answer the phone, and jumps on it before they should.
Yeah.
And of course, then they're not even prepared. You know, they don't have the information in front of them. The dumbest question that's ever asked on the dental practice phone is, what are you coming in for? What's that appointment for? Like, you've got the appointment book there right in front of you, and you're asking the person on the phone. Like, look them up. So that's equal dumbest. The second dumbest, the other one is asking people for their date of birth, either to identify them in your database or to put them in your database. If you went to a barbecue or a cocktail party, would you greet somebody that you'd never met before by saying last name, first name, date of birth?
Date of birth, yeah.
And so one of the things that we teach is that once we've got somebody on the phone, a new patient, we really only need whatever minimal data possible to get them in the appointment book, which is usually their name, their phone number, maybe their email address. That's it.
Yes.
We can put that other data in later, even if we have to put in first of the first 2000 as a fake birthday to get it in there, even if we have to put in a fake social security number. We don't want to switch from being their friend to all of a sudden spending 5 minutes of interrogation about, they're not getting a passport. They're not, they're not entering the country with a fake visa. We want it to be something pleasant. But yet some genius software engineer thought, oh, this is really good. We'll just get all the data now. And, of course, guess what's happening while you're doing that? Phones are being missed and people are going to voice message, not leaving messages, or they're saying, oh, they're too busy. And it's all because some guy said, oh, we'll just get all that data now.
And I'm sure a lot of patients, when they get finished with that phone call, David, are just going, wow, is this really the place that I want to go to? They start questioning their judgment. And that's, I fully agree with you. I did not want my staff to gather a lot of data, technical data. I wanted them to gather information about the patient, about the person. You know, what are they coming in for? What are they looking for? That was the most important thing to me. I wanted to hear their story and their social security number and their insurance. We gather that when they get there and not worry about it. The main thing was creating a connection where that patient hung up and goes, wow, that was a phenomenal conversation. I can't wait to go meet this gal. Oh, by the way, she's so cool. The doctor must be all right also. So I have a great appreciation for the front desk people and what they go through. And I would challenge any doctor, if they think that's an easy job, go up there and spend half a day answering that phone themselves. I'll bet you. Yeah, you're shaking your head vehemently. I'm with you.
It is tough.
And then you got Mrs. Jones standing there in front of you wanting to check out. And so they wear many hats. They have to soothe a lot of emotions up there. They have to create the goodwill of the patient feeling good when they leave so that they want to come back. And, you know, that takes a special person. And we need to make sure that we get that special person when we bring them on board and put them up front behind the telephone. Because they're the doorkeeper to our practice and our future, our reputation, the respect that people feel about from us, and how they speak about us out in the community. And we all want
absolutely, John.
We want that to shine. So, David, in wrapping this up, bringing it back, what would be one big major thing that you would like to share with the dentist out there to help boost them and put them in the right direction, other than giving you a notification that they should come and visit with you about becoming a client? That is a given.
Well, John, one of the things in business that I like to tell everybody is that if it has been done, it can be done again, because these are learnable skills, or you can hire people with those skills to do those jobs for you. If you're talking about running 100 meters faster than Usain Bolt, not everybody can do that. But you can duplicate a business. And so processes can be copied and duplicated. And so success is just a matter of finding the processes and doing what's needed. It's the lessons are there, and so there is always hope. That's the important thing. There is always hope. And so nothing is so bad. You know, the saying, oh, my practice is different, my patients are different, my area is different. Across the board, people are people. Patients are patients. And I've seen, you know, it was one of the early lessons I ever got, John, was, when my practice flatlined for 4 years, and people said, David, your practice is doing double what the average practice is doing. And I thought, no, it could be doing better. I've got spaces in my book. And then I met a dentist doing double what I was doing in a lower socioeconomic part of Sydney than mine. And I thought, I've got to learn from him what he's doing, because he's not that much, he's not no smarter than me. It's got to be what he's doing. He just knows something that I don't know. And so that's the answer. The answer is find somebody who can teach you how to be better at what you do and learn from them. And so, you know, you can work things out for yourself, which takes a lot of time, or you can just find somebody. And so the best advice I received was find a coach. So the first coach I hired, that relationship ended after 6 months. It was bad. It was bad advice. But I knew that it wasn't – having a coach was bad. It was just the advice wasn't up to what I thought. My second coach, 6 years, and my practice tripled its turnover in that time. And then I worked with non-dental coaches, then went back to dental coaches, but always having a coach, having somebody there. You know, you look at the when you watch the tennis, how many coaches are in the coach box? You know, a football team, how many coaches do they have? They have a head coach, and then they have a defense coach and a mind coach and a fitness coach and a strength coach and a offense coach. It's all about sharpening your saw, sharpening your axe, making sure that you can do it. But ultimately, there is hope there. I may not be the coach that somebody's looking for, but they could start with a chat with me, or they could just Google coaches. I don't know. Yeah. Ultimately, the pie is big enough that successful dental practices, we need more successful dental practices, and the easiest way to be successful is to have somebody there helping you with the advice that you need.
Yeah.
Go forward and find it.
You bet. Looking outside of the box of dentistry and finding people such as yourself, David, that have brought in business concepts from the outside into your practice that worked and had a significant impact upon your practice, having someone outside that's not part of the practice looking at it with fresh eyes and fresh minds, that's where you come in as a coach, and you've got valuable insights, great experience, and so you will know how to offer and put together a unique plan for the individuals to help them get to the point to where they want to go if there's another practice in their life. So
John, I think the biggest compliment I ever get is from outside of dentistry, when I'm talking about customer service and business, that, you know, if I'm talking with a restaurant owner or I'm talking with a realtor, or, you know, a good friend of mine's in carpets and flooring. And, you know, the principles of business are the same for all businesses. And so it's, you know, treat your customers right, make sure that your product is of a fine quality that lasts, and market yourself well.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you will have a successful business. And so, you know, check the credentials of the people that you're dealing with as well, because there's a lot of people out there who think, I can be a coach, but they haven't got the runs on the board or they haven't got the education as well. And it is tough out there, for people.
It is. Well, that's where the expertise from someone like you, David, comes in. It's valuable. And so we want to make sure that the people hear your message and understand and appreciate and think that you are the person that they need to get a hold of. And so we're going to put this podcast out there and hope that we get a good listenership. And I'll place all of your contact information at the end of the show notes, David, so they can get a hold of you in that respect. And it's been a pleasure visiting with you today.
John, as always, I've enjoyed chatting with you, and I could chat with you for hours. It's been an absolute pleasure.
We could. Thank you, David.
Thank you very much.
You betcha. And this is our episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I appreciate you listening to us. It is my hope that what we do for you and what we share with you has an impact upon you in your practice, your fulfillment in your dentistry.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless.
Thank you for spending time with us.
And continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more Fearless Conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.